Hey, strangers, before we jump into today's episode, just a note to let you know that my new contract with my ad seller requires 4 ad breaks per episode now. I am doing my best to make the episodes longer to accommodate. I know no one loves ads, but them's the breaks in capitalism. Remember, there are a few options if you want to skip the ads. You can always do it manually, or you can now subscribe through Apple Podcasts and become a casual stranger where you'll get early and ad-free regular episodes, plus the new Strange News Weekly addendum. Or you can sign up on Patreon at patreon.com/grabbadcollab, where for just $8 a month, you'll get early and ad-free Strange, plus all the other amazing content at GrabBag, all ad-free. We have 3 regular weekly shows and a whole handful of quarterly miniseries and bi-weekly shows, all for just $8 a month. See you there, and enjoy. What lengths would you go to be with the object of your affection? How far would you go to remove the obstacles between you? Would you kill to be with the one you love? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I love my husband, but I don't need to be with him 24/7. I'm cool to paint in the basement while he makes furniture in the garage. Also, by the way, I am a person who doesn't always like or agree with other people's ideas about stuff, but I can tell you I cannot imagine the disagreement that would lead me to, as they say on the TikTok, unalive someone. Good Lord. Maybe you can imagine it. I don't know, but for today's episode, stranger, let me just prepare you by saying that no matter how imaginative you are, the truth is always stranger than fiction. Parker and Juliet Hume met in the early 1950s when they were young teenagers. Pauline came from a working-class family. Her father managed a fish shop, her 17-year-old sister worked in a lingerie shop, and Pauline's mother, Honora, kept up the boarding house the family operated out of their home. Pauline's parents weren't actually married, though this was not common knowledge, and Pauline was later shocked to discover that her last name was actually Parker, like her mother, and not Reaper like her father, as she had always believed it to be. Still, the family lived a mostly conventional lower-middle-class life. Pauline's house was adjacent to the Christchurch Girls' High School where she was enrolled, and her parents also worked as part-time house staff and gardeners for the University of Canterbury, which was just blocks away. Pauline was, by all accounts, a shy, lonely girl. Her diaries showed her to be bright and intelligent, as well as a skilled writer, but she kept to herself socially. A former classmate described her as, quote, a moody, scowling type of girl, but a strong character. She insisted on being called Paul. She was a tomboy with dumpy boyish looks and curly black hair that was shorter than the other girls, end quote. Well, who can blame her for not wanting to socialize with people who would describe her this way? Judgy much? Also, I just want to pause here to say that though she apparently insisted on being called Paul, she did refer to herself as Pauline, among other names, in her own diaries. So, for the sake of clarity, that's what I'll be calling her throughout the episode. Please don't DM me about dead naming people. Thanks. Anyway, things changed for Pauline when she met Juliet. Juliet was from slightly more advantageous circumstances. She was born in London and came to live in Christchurch in 1948, a few years before she met Pauline. Her father was a physicist and became the rector of the University of Canterbury, which is what brought the family to New Zealand. They lived at Islam Homestead on the university's grounds, just blocks away from Pauline and her family. Juliet, with her posh English accent and porcelain beauty and natural grace, couldn't have seemed more different from Pauline. But when Pauline and Juliet met at 14 and 13 respectively, they discovered that they had some things in common, despite their apparent differences. For one thing, the girls had both suffered from prolonged illnesses as children. Pauline had developed a bone disease at the age of 5 known as osteomyelitis, an infectious inflammation of the bone marrow that is usually caused by a bacterial or fungal infection. The disease nearly killed her, and she was hospitalized for a 9-month stint at the age of 5, and then again at age 7. The treatment for the disease involved a painful surgery and a long, difficult recovery, which left Pauline with chronic leg pain throughout her youth. She was essentially disabled following her illness and was excused from physical activities at school. Juliet, too, had been hospitalized when she was young due to a repeated struggle with tuberculosis. She actually spent her early childhood living in Barbados and South Africa, as it was believed the warmer climates might improve her health. During that time, she bounced between sanitariums, boarding schools, and the homes of relatives before she finally settled in New Zealand. Even then, she was separated from her family, who sent her off to a boarding school in a more tropical part of New Zealand, believing it was a better climate for her recurring condition. Juliet became very depressed during this time, and after several months, her parents brought her back to Christchurch, where she was tutored privately for the remainder of the school year before moving on to high school. Another thing the girls had in common was their considerable intelligence. Pauline, due to her multiple childhood hospitalizations, had missed an entire year of school, but still managed to begin high school with the students in her age group and excelled in her classes. She was artistic and had a talent for writing and for sculpture. Juliet likewise had an extraordinarily high IQ, according to multiple sources, though it was said she was disrespectful to her teachers. According to TrueCrimeMama.com in 2020, quote, "She was narcissistic, condescending to her peers, and demanded to be in charge in every situation," end quote. A real Regina George. Juliet's insubordination didn't stop Pauline from warming to her, and after bonding over their childhood infirmities, the two girls struck up a fast friendship. When Pauline first met Juliet, TrueCrimeMama.com says she, quote, "excitedly told her mother that Juliet was the first person she knew whose strong will matched her own," end quote. Another thing the girls had in common. The girls quickly developed an intense friendship, which initially made their parents very happy. It was good to see the two formerly lonely, sickly children finally seeming happy and normal. Hilda Hume later was quoted as saying that she and her ex-husband had been thrilled that Juliet had made a friend after having had considerable anxiety over what the Humes called, quote, "defects in her personality." Juliet and Pauline spent as much time as they could together. They were stuck like glue to one another in school, after school, in the evenings, on the weekends, and for overnight visits, all mostly at Juliet's house. According to an article about the case by Neil Clarkson in 1989, quote, "Pauline visited Juliet Hume at Ilam, sometimes for days at a time, and became entranced by the Humes' flamboyant lifestyle," end quote. When they say flamboyant lifestyle, I can only assume they mean that Hilda was not a working-class drudge like Nora. Or maybe it's a reference to her unusual work as a marriage counselor. Or maybe it relates to the live-in boyfriend she had while also still being married. The possibilities are endless. Anyway, whatever Pauline's impression of Juliet's mother, she and Juliet were inseparable. One article even mentioned that they would sneak out at midnight to have a picnic and drink wine or to ride Juliet's horse. Wine? Classy. I used to like to sneak out and drink with my friends, too, when I was a teen, but we were more a Zima crowd than a Pinot Noir class. And we definitely weren't doing equestrian activities. We once dragged an old couch all through the West Village and sat on it at random corners being obnoxious. Honestly, nighttime wine and horse riding sounds like a pretty cool time I would enjoy at this stage of my life, if I could stay awake past 9. It doesn't, however, sound much like the behavior of teenagers, and certainly not the behavior of the chronically ill and physically disabled who can't do gym class. After the initial relief Pauline and Juliet's parents felt at seeing their daughter's social progress, the girls' closeness became the cause of some concern. Strangers, Rula is back to remind you that you need therapy. Yes, you, stranger, I'm talking to you. You know who you are and you know what's weighing on you. Rula makes it easier than ever to get therapy, and because they take most insurance, sessions can be as low as $15. Rula is committed to seeing you succeed in reaching your therapy goals, making sure their providers are carefully screened and vetted, monitoring the quality of their care, and helping you monitor your progress in therapy. Rula supports every aspect of your mental health journey, from therapy to medication management. With its diverse network of licensed, experienced professionals, Rula's therapists and psychiatrists make it easy for you to get the care you need. Thousands have already trusted Rula to support them on their journey toward improved mental health and overall well-being. Head on over to rula.com/strange to get started today. After you sign up, they ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them our show sent you. Go to rula.com/strange and take the first step towards better mental health today. You deserve quality care from someone who cares. Once the adults saw the nature of the friendship between their daughters shift, they found it unsettling. Pauline and Juliet were quickly becoming obsessed with each other, and as they did, they became increasingly distant from their families. They dropped any other acquaintances or friends they had and just fell into each other. The Star Sun in 1954 described their friendship as developing, quote, rapidly into what may be called an intense devotion for each other, so much so that their main object in life was to be together, to share each other's thoughts and activities, secrets and plans, and if anyone dared come between them, that person would be forcibly removed, end quote. Okay, so that does sound a little codependent and maybe obsessive. But then again, who hasn't been glued to a best friend with whom they've spent so many nights that they forget which clothes are theirs? We've all done it. What's unusual about that? Young friendships can be intense. It doesn't mean the relationship is unhealthy. And what were these parents really afraid of? That their kids were too close? Or was that code for something else? Like the fact that Pauline and Juliet's parents were all worried that their daughters were involved romantically or even sexually with one another. Oh boy. Bear in mind that being gay was not only frowned upon and illegal at the time, but it was also viewed as a mental illness. So the deepening closeness between the girls was threatening on all kinds of levels. And it certainly does seem that Pauline and Juliet's friendship changed shape as they moved deeper into adolescence. Pauline wrote in her diary about a time when the relationship turned a corner, describing when the girls, following a bicycle ride, stopped, took off their outer clothes, and ran through the bushes together, quote, ecstatically. Aside from the very real dangers of poison ivy, poison oak, ticks, bears, men, and any other manner of natural threat, this kind of behavior was very much frowned upon. Given the terribly limited perspective of the day, I guess one could view the parental worries over this development more as a concern than bigotry, but does it have to be either or? And hot take, I would think conservative parents would prefer their daughters hook up with each other rather than getting knocked up by some dopey local boy. So far, scissoring has resulted in zero pregnancies. And maybe they did weigh out those options and decide to look the other way because both families continued to allow the girls to see one another. Pauline spent lots of nights and vacations with the Humes. There was one period in May 1953 where Juliet had to be hospitalized for 112 days. During that time, Pauline visited frequently, and she and Juliet exchanged letters that were, according to the New Zealand Herald, quote, vivid and fantastical writings where they assumed different characters and played out storylines, end quote. The letters were written and exchanged at a prolific pace, according to part one of the Parker Hume murder episode of the podcast True Crime New Zealand, with the girls taking on the roles of two star-crossed lovers, characters they created in the, quote, mystical Neverland of Barovnia, end quote. Pauline wrote on May 29, 1953, "This evening, I had a brainwave that Juliet and I should write to each other as Charles and Deborah. I wrote a 6-page letter as Charles and a 2-page letter as Pauline. She has entered into the spirit of the thing greatly." One such letter goes, "My dearest darling Deborah, affairs of state continue to occupy my time. I have to report that the lower classes are terrifically dull. Only yesterday, I was compelled to execute 7 peasants just to alleviate the boredom. Diello insisted in coming along. In fact, he made such a fuss that I had to let him wield the axe himself. Heads did roll, not just the prisoners, but the royal guard, my valet, and several unfortunate onlookers copped it as well. Diello, by the way, was the imaginary son of these two imaginary lovers. Over the next 4 months, while Juliet was confined to the Kashmir Sanitarium, they continued this correspondence. "Oh, Charles, I am despairing enough to put Diello in the hands of the Cardinal, in the hope that a good dose of religion will set the young chap on the right path." Pauline wrote in her diary on June 14th, "Juliet and I decided that Christian religion had become too much of a farce, and we decided to make up one of our own." Their correspondence was intense, to say the least, but it wasn't just about how often they wrote, or the strange, dramatic nature of the letters, or even how much Pauline and Juliet wanted to be together. The people in their lives began to witness the girls' personalities shifting. No longer shy or introverted, they became conceited and arrogant, believing and proclaiming that they were geniuses, that they were special. Pauline wrote, "We have an extra part of our brain which can appreciate the fourth world, but meanwhile, on 2 days a year, we may use the key to look into that beautiful world." The fourth world was a fantasy world, quote, of princes, damsels, heroes, and villains, end quote, made up of the fantastical cities Volumnia and Barovnia. This invented world was, to them, a, quote, heaven beyond heaven, and was ruled by saints of their creation, mostly modeled after famous singers and movie stars. They began calling themselves heavenly creatures and decided in their writing that laws did not apply to them because of what they called their exalted status. An article from New Zealand Women's Weekly from 1997 described their world. Quote, "Obsessed with their writing and their fantasy worlds of Volumnia and Barovnia, the girls built a temple where they held nighttime ceremonies to honor their saints, singers and actors they had chosen who represented their ideals. They gave them names like He, Him, and It. Their favorite, He, was singer Mario Lanza," end quote. They delved far into the fourth world in their letters when Juliet was away. It was one way they could stay connected. Despite the girls' continued devotion to one another, while Juliet was at the sanatorium, Pauline became romantically involved with one of her parents' boarders. He was a university student named Nicholas. Or maybe he was actually named John, and Pauline just called him Nicholas in her diaries since she was fond of giving people new names. It's not totally clear. I will call him Nicholas. Pauline's father discovered the affair after he barged in on his daughter in bed with Nicholas. Evidently, he interrupted them before they did the deed, so to speak. According to an article by the Crime Library about the incident, Pauline's family shamed her for this and kicked Nicholas out of the house. To be fair, Pauline was only 14 and Nicholas was, well, a university student. Then they moved Pauline into the bedroom across the hall from theirs. This was not exactly a recipe for peace in the household, and family tensions grew from there. Pauline wrote in her diary, "July 1953. To think that so much could have happened in so little time, caused by so few. A terrible tragedy has occurred. I lay there mesmerized. It was just too frightful to believe. When I got up, I found Father had told Mother. I had a nasty, foreboding feeling at first. But now I realize my crime was too frightful for an ordinary lecture. I am terribly cut up. I miss Nicholas terribly. Mother thinks I will have nothing more to do with him. Little she knows." Pauline never wavered in her loyalty to Juliet, though. On September 9th, 1953, she wrote, "It was wonderful returning with Juliet. It was as if she had never been away. I believe I could fall in love with Juliet." Despite this, Pauline continued visiting with Nicholas after her parents had kicked him out, sneaking out of her parents' home and into Nicholas's apartment. In her diaries, Pauline wrote the following entries in October 1953. Nicholas was pleased that I was so early. We sat around and talked for an hour, then went to bed. I declined the invitation at first, but he became very masterful, and I had no option. I discovered that I had not lost my virginity on Thursday night. However, there is no doubt whatsoever that I have now. And it is so nice to think that Juliet and I could continue our friendship unmolested, with no outside interests. When Juliet returned from the sanitarium, Pauline broke things off with Nicholas. She said in her diary entry from Juliet's birthday that she told Nicholas this evening that I was no longer very much in love. The girls became even closer following Juliet's return. Pauline was invited by the Humes to stay more frequently to help Juliet's recovery. Crime Library says, quote, "There is little question that by the time Juliet was released from the sanatorium, uncured, as the physician said at the time, her relationship with Pauline was the principal one in her life," end quote. As the press reported in a 1989 review of the case, quote, "To help Juliet's recovery, Pauline, who left school the previous year to attend a commercial college, was invited to stay more frequently at Ilam. The relationship between the two then became a lot closer," end quote. In November of 1953, Pauline's parents sent her to a psychiatrist because they were worried about her rapid and alarming weight loss. The doctor told them that Pauline and Juliet were in a homosexual relationship, but not to worry because it was a phase they would grow out of. Right. Strangers, my favorite subscription box is back. Wild Grain makes it super easy for you to fill your fridge and your belly with delicious breads, artisan pastries, and fresh pastas. There is so much to choose from at Wild Grain, and each box is fully customizable, including gluten-free and 100% plant-based options. My family's favorites these days are the brioche sandwich loaf, the Parmesan herb biscuits, and the potato gnocchi. And by the way, Wild Grain has a whole selection of delicious pasta sauces, too. Everything bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, so you can serve up warm, fresh baked bread anytime. Are you ready to bring all your favorite carbs right to your doorstep? Be sure to check out Wild Grain so you can begin building your own box of artisanal breads, pastas, and pastries. For a limited time, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off the first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/strange to start your subscription. You heard me, free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/strange. That's wildgrain.com/strange, or you can use promo code strange at checkout. The New Zealand Herald reported, quote, "Her doctor stated the condition was due to her homosexual attachment to Juliet, which prompted an ultimatum from Honora. If Pauline's health did not improve, she could not see Juliet. The thought is too dreadful. Life would be unbearable without Deborah. I wish I could die," Pauline wrote in her diary, end quote. The girls, once reunited, continued to codependently dissociate into their imaginary world. The fourth world was part of their customized religious belief system that was the result of their pooled imaginations, talents, and shared desire to escape their lives. They wrote plays, poems, books, and stories together. In their made-up utopia, they reinvented themselves as more beautiful, clever, and talented versions of themselves. This bled into the real world as Pauline and Juliet planned their future together, saving up their money so they could travel to America, where they would have their books published to great acclaim and they would become the beautiful film stars they knew they deserved to be. Every future they imagined had each other in it. It would always be Pauline and Juliet forever. According to the piece in the New Zealand Women's Weekly, quote, "The girls decided on a fantastic plan to go to New York, where they would find a publisher for their books and then go on to Hollywood to turn them into movies. Pauline visited shipping companies inquiring about fares," end quote. As hard as the pair tried to shut the real world out of their lives and dreams, though, real life crept in and threatened to ruin everything. First, Pauline was not invited to go to Ilam over the summer holidays, as she always had been since the girls had first become friends. Was this because of the now general belief that the two were engaged in a sexual relationship? Maybe, but it might have had more to do with the Humes' growing marital difficulties. In 1954, Juliet's parents separated. This probably didn't come as a shock to too many people, since Juliet's mom, Hilda, was, according to TrueCrimeMama.com, quote, an attractive woman who loved music and art, entertained lavishly, and was well known to be sexually outgoing, end quote. Oh boy, she liked art and was sexually outgoing? You know what that means. But it wasn't just Hilda. Juliet's dad had his own stuff going on. According to AdamAbrams.com, there had been, quote, published rumors that Dr. Hume may have had extramarital dalliances, end quote. Before the Humes officially split, they had already entered into an unusual living arrangement with a man named Walter Bill Perry, who was Hilda's lover. Listen, marriages come in all different flavors, okay? So things with the Humes were, in contemporary Facebook terms, complicated. Still, even if the world at large had seen the writing on the wall, the news did surprise and upset Juliet, who learned about her mother and Bill when she walked in on them drinking tea in bed together late one night. I don't think that is a euphemism. I think they were just drinking tea. Still, I guess it would be weird to find your mom downing PG tips under the covers with a dude who was not your dad. So, yeah, that was probably rough on Juliet. Though when Pauline wrote about Juliet's discovery in her journal, she didn't describe much distress on Juliet's part. She crept as stealthily as she could into Mr. Peary's flat and stole upstairs. She heard voices from inside his bedroom, and she stayed outside for a little while. Then she opened the door and switched the light on in one movement. Mr. Peary and Mrs. Hume were in bed drinking tea. Deborah felt an hysterical tendency to giggle. She said hello. She was shaking with emotion and shock, although she'd known what she would find. They goggled at her for a minute, and her mother said, I suppose you want an explanation. Yes, Deborah replied, I do. Well, you see, we are in love, Mother explained. Deborah was wonderful. But I knew that, she exclaimed. Her voice seemed to belong to someone else. Her mother explained that Dr. Hume knew all about it, and that they intended to live as a threesome. Anyway, Deborah went as far as telling about our desire to go to America in 6 months, though she could not explain the reason, of course. Mr. Perry gave her £100 to get permits. Everyone is being frightfully decent about everything, and I feel wildly happy and rather queer. I am going out to Ilam tomorrow, as we have so much to talk over. This unconventional situation also probably didn't help Juliet's father with what had become a worsening scenario at work. Dr. Hume had conflicts with directors at the university that had reached their apex. He was dismissed from his position as rector. He filed for divorce and was awarded full custody of Juliet and her brother Jonathan. Once Dr. Hume left the university and the Humes' marriage was officially finished, they didn't see much reason to stay in Christchurch. During the divorce process, Juliet's parents decided that her father would return to England and Juliet and her brother Jonathan would go with him. Later, though possibly because of her health, Juliet was told she would be sent instead to live with relatives in South Africa while her brother and father returned to England. I will say, stranger, that while Juliet was moved around a lot as a kid and spent a lot of time away from her parents for health reasons, it seems possible that maybe this had more to do with the Humes' mental health than Juliet's physical health. It sounds like Juliet was a lot. Maybe she was more than the Humes could deal with, or maybe the Humes were sucky, self-centered parents, or maybe both. Whatever the case, the news that Juliet would be leaving New Zealand obviously caused the Bobbsey twins great distress. They decided together that Pauline should go to South Africa with Juliet, obviously. They begged both sets of parents to allow Pauline to go, but no dice. Pauline had always been somewhat close with Hilda, so it seemed possible to her that Hilda might allow her to join the Humes, and after a while, I guess they wore her down because Juliet's parents did eventually agree and even offered to pay for Pauline to go with Juliet, who, I am guessing, was kind of used to getting her way. And since Bill Perry and Juliet's mom had already signed off on the two girls moving off together, it wasn't that much of a leap. But even if they had been able to sway the Humes, Honora Parker was not about to send her daughter to another continent to live her best life with her spoiled, rich, lesbian girlfriend on someone else's dime. So the plan was a no-go. And then, in a truly baffling moment of strange parenting, for some reason, both sets of parents decided to let the girls spend the last weeks together, with Pauline staying with the Humes. If everyone was so worried about how close these girls were, and it was clear that their separation was going to be a traumatic blow, it's hard to understand how they thought letting them spend 2 weeks together was going to make it any better when the time came for the inevitable. I don't know. To me, it seems this would make things tremendously more difficult. Psychiatrist Reginald Medlicott would later say that during this period of final closeness, the violence in the girls' writing increased to a, quote, fantastic crescendo. This is kind of saying something, since their earlier writing had all that stuff about beheading people. They spent long days writing their novels and worshiping the saints they had ordained. Then, in the middle of the night, the girls would return to bed and act out how they believed each of these saints made love. If they hadn't been having sex before this, they certainly were now. Pauline's diary entries from June 1954 included this. June 11th, we acted out how each saint would make love in bed, only doing the first seven, as it was 7:30 a.m. by then. We felt very satisfied. June 13th, we spent a hectic night going through the saints. It was wonderful, heavenly, beautiful, and ours. We felt satisfied indeed. We have now learned the peace of the thing called bliss, the joy of the thing called sin. Pauline blamed her mother, Honora, for her impending separation from Juliet. As far as she was concerned, her mother had always been an obstacle in their friendship. Maybe because of this belief, Pauline wrote about wanting her mother to die back in February of 1954. There seemed to be no possibility of mother relenting and allowing me to go out to Islam. This afternoon, mother told me I could not go out to Islam again until I was 8 stone and more cheerful. As I am now 7 stone, there is little hope. She is so unreasonable. Why could not mother die? Dozens of people are dying. Thousands are dying every day. So why not mother and father too? Strangers, Quince is back. I recently ordered a whole new set of black t-shirts from Quince. You can never have too many black t-shirts. Plus, 2 washable stretch silk short sleeve notch collar blouses. So beautiful, so comfortable, and so easy to take care of. Plus, I just ordered my kid new bamboo sheets from Quince. Quince offers luxury goods at a deep, deep discount with 365-day returns. Think 100% European linen tops starting at $30, washable silk dresses and skirts, and soft cotton sweaters. Versatile warm weather pieces you're going to reach for again and again. Quince is half the cost of similar brands. Plus, Quince employs ethical and sustainable practices and partnerships, so you know that from start to finish, you can feel good about what you're wearing. Give your summer closet an upgrade with Quince. Go to quince.com/strange for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/strange to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/strange. Pauline told Juliet's mother on a number of occasions that Honora didn't love her. She told Hilda she wanted to live with the Humes because she was at her happiest there. She also said that Honora hit her frequently as a punishment. Honora, as the girls saw it, was the one thing standing between them and their South African/Hollywood future. they formed a plan to stay together, and that plan was to murder Pauline's mother. Once they were free of her influence and control, they could go on to South Africa and then to California, where they would finally be famous and adored. So one afternoon in June 1954, Pauline and Juliet had afternoon tea with Honora in Victoria Park in Christchurch and strolled through the woods together. They got all of 500 feet down the path when Juliet dropped a small pink rock on the ground as a distraction. When Honora bent over to pick up the rock, Pauline pulled out a stocking-wrapped brick and hit her mother in the back of her head. It turned out, though, that beating someone to death was more difficult than the girls had anticipated. Pauline later described the events, saying that her first blows injured but did not kill her mother. Juliet would also later describe the scene to investigators this way. "We went to a spot well down one of the paths, and Mrs. Parker decided to come back. On the way back, I was walking in front. I was expecting Mrs. Parker to be attacked. I heard noises behind me. It was a loud conversation in anger. I saw Mrs. Parker in a sort of squatting position. They were quarreling. I went back. I saw Pauline hit Mrs. Parker with the brick in the stocking. I took the stocking and hit her too." Pauline and Juliet struck Honora with the brick a total of 45 times. Let that sink in. 45 times. Honestly, I can't even begin to process that. Following the murder, Juliet and Pauline ran back to the tea kiosk, screaming their heads off and covered in blood, saying that there had been an accident, screaming, "Please help us! Mummy has been hurt, covered with blood!" The police came and discovered Honora's body. The girls claimed that Honora fell and hit her head on a rock, but it was clear almost instantly that Honora's death was not an accident. There were marks on her neck that indicated she had been held down while she was being beaten. She had defensive wounds on her hands, and the girls also left the blood and gore-covered murder weapon near her body. Her head was described as being battered to pieces. Dr. Hume arrived shortly after the police to collect the girls and take them home, where they were fed, bathed, and put to bed after being given a sedative, so they were not at the scene when the police wanted to question them. Juliet's mother would later testify that her daughter was in a state of collapse that night and didn't seem to grasp the reality of the situation at all. Bill Perry would also testify about this night. He described Pauline as comatose and Juliet as flushed, perspiring, and extremely animated. The next day, he stated that Pauline told him that her mother had fallen and hit her head on the stone repeatedly, that the stone looked like it was half a brick, and that she thought her mother was having a fit. Bill must have had some suspicions at this time because he asked Pauline if she and her mother had gotten in a fight and if she had to protect herself from her mother hitting her. Pauline said no. She also now said her mother had never hit her. Once the police did interview them, both girls initially gave the same story about what had happened. Honora fell and hit her head on a rock repeatedly. It's giving, "He ran into my knife 10 times.
And then he ran into my knife. He ran into my knife 10 times.
Pauline attempted to take sole responsibility for the murder, at first telling investigators that Juliet was not involved at all. Juliet's initial claims that she had walked ahead of Honora and Pauline and therefore did not see anything kind of backed up Pauline's story. The Christchurch City Libraries have a transcript of the confession.
"Who assaulted your mother?"
"I did."
"Why?"
"If you don't mind, I won't answer that question."
"When did you make up your mind to kill your mother?"
"A few days ago."
"Did you tell anyone you were going to do it?"
"No. My friend does not know anything about it. She was out of sight at the time. She had gone on ahead."
"What did your mother say?"
"I would rather not answer that."
how many times did you hit your mother?
A good many times, I imagine.
What did you use?
A half a brick and a stocking. I took them with me for the purpose. I had the brick in my shoulder bag. I wish to state that Juliet did not know of my intentions, and she did not see me strike my mother. I took the chance to strike my mother while Juliet was away. I still do not wish to say why I killed my mother.
Did you tell Juliet that you killed your mother?
She knew nothing about it. As far as I know, she believed what I told her, although she may have guessed what had happened. But I doubt it, as we were both so shaken that it probably did not occur to her. As soon as I started to strike my mother, I regretted it, but could not stop then. Strangers, I sent my friend Jordan some Ritual Plus Symbiotic for their messed up digestive system, and now they won't stop calling to tell me how much better they're pooping. I'm like, okay, I get it. Ritual is the best. Stop calling me about your poop. Sheesh. Ritual is a 3-in-1 pre, pro, and postbiotic to support a balanced gut microbiome with daily use. It's designed with a delayed-release capsule to help reach the colon, not the stomach, an ideal place for probiotics to survive and grow and do their work. The little minty pill doesn't need refrigeration, so you can keep it wherever is most convenient for you so you'll never forget. Plus, it's vegan-friendly and formulated without GMOs, major allergens, animal products, shady fillers, and artificial colors. Not only that, but it's HSA and FSA eligible with a seamless checkout experience, so you can save when you shop with pre-tax dollars. So get your gut going. Support a balanced gut microbiome with Ritual's Symbiotic Plus. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/strange. That's ritual.com/strange for 25% off your first order. The police, for their part, believe Juliet was there and helped. They confronted Pauline, saying as much. In spite of her efforts to claim sole responsibility, Pauline herself actually led the police to the truth when they noticed her writing furiously on a scrap of paper that turned out to be a diary entry about successfully carrying out the moida, which was, by the way, how the girls referred to murder, like out of some old-timey gangster movie. The Humes have been wonderfully kind and sympathetic. Anyone would think I'd been good. I've had a pleasant time with the police, talking 19 to the dozen and behaving as though I hadn't a care in the world. I haven't had a chance to talk to Deborah properly, but I am taking the blame for everything. The police seized Pauline's diary, which contained the proof that Juliet was aware of the plan. April 30th, 1954. I told Deborah of my intentions, and she is rather worried but does not disagree violently. June 20th, 1954. We discussed our plans for moitering Mother and made them a little clearer. Peculiarly enough, I have no qualms of conscience. June 21st, 1954. I rose late and helped Mother vigorously this morning. Deborah rang and we decided to use a brick and a stocking rather than a sandbag. We discussed the moiter fully. I feel very keyed up as though I were planning a surprise party. Mother has fallen in with everything beautifully, and the happy event is to take place tomorrow afternoon. So next time I write in this diary, Mother will be dead. How odd, yet how pleasing. June 22nd, 1954. Day of the happy event. I am writing a little of this up in the morning before the death. I felt very excited, and the night before Christmas-ish last night. I did not have pleasant dreams, though. I am about to rise. Police used the diary to confront Juliet again, who confessed to her part in the murder, even stating, "After the first blow was struck, I knew it would be necessary for us to kill her." She gave her confession after speaking to Bill Perry, who convinced her to confess by telling her he knew the story she and Pauline had told him couldn't be true. Dr. Hume left New Zealand with Juliet's brother as soon as Juliet was charged. Hilda remained behind and began selling her belongings to help pay for Juliet's defense. The article from New Zealand Women's Weekly reported, quote, "The killing that was shocking, even for today's standards, deeply disturbed conservative Christchurch. The arresting officer in the case later committed suicide. His daughter said the murder had deeply upset him. What really got to him was not only that they were the same age as me, but they appeared to be two normal girls. End quote. This is the crux of it, stranger. This is the thing that gave me pause as I read the research. There were so many things about Pauline and Juliet that were relatable, familiar even. Even the ugly aspects of their personality and relationship don't immediately add up to murder. All teenagers are self-centered and sometimes arrogant. All teenage girls have beef with their mothers. That's kind of the whole thing about being a teenage girl. And in some ways, Pauline and Juliet are sympathetic. I can't imagine, in this conservative environment, the pressure of having to justify my relationship or having people make so many assumptions and cast so many aspersions on said relationship. Anyone could see these same girls being characters in a different story, a story where they are beloved protagonists. But that, stranger, is not the story I am telling. That story doesn't end in horrific matricide. Next time, on Strange and Unexplained, we see the aftermath of Honora Parker's murder and learn about the fate of the heavenly creatures. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grabbag Collab. This episode was written by Eve Kerrigan and me, Daisy Egan, with research by Joe Gordet, sound design and engineering by Jeff Devine, music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have an idea for an episode, head to our website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. I will write back. For more amazing content, join us at patreon.com/grabbagcollab, where for just $5 a month, you get all the Grab Bag exclusive shows, and for $8, you get those, plus Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries and Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free. Grab Bag is an all-female and non-binary-owned profit-share network where our contributors get to keep ownership of their shows. We strive to give a platform to those who might not be able to land themselves on a bigger network. Who knows? Maybe you have a podcast idea you'd like to pitch to Grab Bag. We've got live recordings, watch parties, book clubs, and more. Why there's so much going on over at Grab Bag, you'll wonder if we missed the memo on how capitalism works. Join me on Instagram at SNUPod, Daisy Egan, and Grab Bag Collab. Or head to the Facebook page to join in the conversation. If you like the show, please visit a sponsor with our unique code, give us a quick review and 5 stars, subscribe and download, and tell a friend. Stay strange.